Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
What are eight values that can change your life? Hello, everyone. Kevin Cruz here. Welcome to the LeadX Show. This is where you go to stand out and to get ahead. We've got another great episode today. You're going to hear part one of my conversation with an amazing woman who immigrated to the U.S. from Hong Kong and today is the CEO and president of a company doing over $100 million a year in business. Part two will air tomorrow. But I also want to say thank you. After just 5 months, we are getting over 100,000 listens a month from 148 different countries. That is a huge milestone on our journey, and we're just getting started. It's happening because you are telling your colleagues at work that the LeadX Show will help them to stand out and to get ahead. You're telling your friends that the LeadX Show is the smartest way to start their day. You keep listening 5 days a week because you want to achieve your full potential. Thanks for investing your time with me, and thanks for helping us to build the LeadX family. Today's 1 minute career tip, own your mistakes. As a manager, one of the worst things you can do is to blame others, to throw other people under the bus. Your people are gonna hate you for it, and your boss is gonna see right through it. People respect and admire authenticity and those who say, the buck stops here. Now here's how to take ownership when things go wrong. Acknowledge that what happened was different than what was desired and that you are accountable. Now there's no need to linger over the mistake, but do take the time to identify why the problem happened. Indeed, you may discover that someone on your team made a mistake, they messed up. That's different from them being the one to blame. You are still accountable if they report to you. Make it right. What needs to happen to fix the situation at hand? Do what needs to be done to make sure the mistake doesn't happen again. Own your mistakes. Our guest today immigrated to the U.S. from Hong Kong when she was about a year old, and today she's the first woman president and CEO of Princess House, a multi-million dollar direct selling company. Her core philosophy of overcoming fear enabled her to consistently shatter glass ceilings throughout her career and resonates with the 25,000 plus business consultants that she leads daily, most of whom are Latinas. Her new book is Fearless Living, 8 Life-Changing Values for Breakthrough Success. Our guest is Connie Tang. Connie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Kevin. Pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm excited to talk to you about your book, but I always throw a doozy of a question at our guest first, which is, we want you to tell us a story. We want to hear a story about a time when you failed, maybe early in your career, and what was your lesson learned? Because, you know, honestly, I just want to learn from your failure.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to highlight a moment of weakness. let me think about this. You know, there have been more than one, I will tell you, confess to that. But let me tell you the story of one of my first jobs with a very large multinational beauty company when I was in New York and I worked for Lancome Cosmetics. So this was early on in my career. And I would tell you that I had been working at the company for probably about a year and a half, and my boss left, who I loved. We had a very synergistic relationship. She got me. She nurtured me. She believed in me. She gave me positive encouragement and fed me emotionally, professionally, as well as mentally. And I got a new boss because my boss, the first boss, decided she was going to be an entrepreneur, go figure, and actually become one of the owners of the first Equinoxes in New York City.
Oh, neat.
And yeah, this was probably in the early 90s. Wow. And my new boss came on and was cheery and very likable. And I continued to work with her the same way I worked with my last boss. I assumed she would want the same thing or the same kind of relationship. I was extremely motivated. I was a self-starter. So I, at the time, had a region. I managed and oversaw the businesses of 13 different retail stores, all the way up from upstate White Plains, New York, to down south in Monmouth, New Jersey. Mm. So I had a territory that I traveled to. 13 stores I cycled through. I was responsible. Basically, the one line responsibility was for sales.
Right, right.
But that included the counter managers, productivity, tracking sales results, training new people, hiring for special events with the retailer and the store that I was based in, and working through, I would say, the politics of mall politics within a cosmetics floor in a major department store. And I did a lot of things on my own. I had developed to be very self-sufficient. You're sort of a little bit of a road warrior in the car, and I was very self-sufficient. I thought the right thing to do was, again, to give her updates. She got my schedule in advance. She got copied on newsletters that I created for my staff. She got my weekly sales reports and statistics versus my goals and targets. And I just assumed that was good enough. Came time for my first review with her, and to my surprise, to my disappointment, and it was earth-shattering when she actually told me she felt like I wasn't really engaged.
Wow.
Or connected with her. And she said, you know, half the time I'm not really sure what you're doing. And I, of course, very defensively said, well, you have my schedule. You know where I am. You know what I'm doing. I send you my reports. I'm doing more than extra things. You know, for example, I thought it was very cool that I knew my New York City store had a large population of Asian consumers. So I took it upon myself to make sure that the staff at the store at Macy's Herald Square had a book of Lancome Chinese advertisement and write-ups and editorials.
Right, right.
Because no one on the staff actually was Asian. But this gave them something to show when they had an Asian customer. I thought that was very cool.
Right.
I wasn't asked to do it. I thought it was creative. She didn't really care. But I was devastated. You know, it was the first real full-time everyday job I had right out of college. And I was devastated that she was telling me what I was doing wasn't good enough. But what I learned was, in hindsight, and it took maybe not in that moment, it probably took a few years, and I still look back and think about it and very thoughtfully assess what could I have done better, is it made me realize that I never had a discussion. She didn't either, but I didn't take the responsibility to ask for clarification of what are the expectations. I assumed she had the same work style and the same leadership style as my previous boss. I realized that my method of communications was not of the highest value or what she was looking for. I thought by sending her things, copying her on things, and that was actually before the days of email, so they were faxes.
Right.
And voice messages, you know, that was enough. And I can only take responsibility for what I did and didn't do. I can opine about what she should have done too, for
right,
sure.
Right.
That's the defensive side of me. But that's also taking the victim mentality. And I would say in the beginning, when I first got that review, for sure, I went through very emotionally, well, she never asked, she never said, she didn't do, she didn't this, she didn't this. But now today, a little bit more grown up, a little bit more wise in years of experience, I realized that there were things that I could have taken responsibility for and taken action on. So lesson learned for me was, don't assume when you have a change in position, a change in role, or a change in leadership that is status quo in terms of how that relationship and the dynamics are, the frequency of communications, and even the mode of communications. Don't assume that what you were doing before works with this different dynamic of a relationship. And also assume that you need to start all over again in building a new relationship. And it's almost sad to say that it doesn't matter what you did before. That's not true. What you did before certainly should carry through. However, you do have to reestablish that connection and engagement. So I would say that was a tough lesson learned. That was one that was, you know, you're young, you're impressionable, right, and you're very, very sensitive to it. And that was a real lesson learned. I would say today, many, many years later, another lesson learned from me from that particular experience was, do not let culture, what is deemed a cultural attribute that is a positive attribute, and do not use that and translate it automatically into the business work environment. Mm. So I'll give you a good example. For me, as an Asian American, and particularly as an immigrant to this country, the virtue of being respectful to your elders or those in authority, has nothing to do with age, you know, somebody who's a higher level than you, the virtue of being quiet and just listening, don't ask questions, don't contest, don't refute, don't rebut, right? That's very highly valued in our cultural and societal norms. However, that today, and certainly already back then, is not the right way to go about in your professional and personal development. I didn't know that. I thought the way I was brought up is the way you're supposed to carry it through in the work environment. And that was a very good lesson learned for me many, many years later, as I think about, why didn't I have courage to speak up? Why didn't I do that? You know, and I think there's also a lot of the notion, I really believe to do better, you need to know better. I didn't know better.
Mm. LeadX listeners, it's so many great lessons, actually, from the story Connie told about her new boss. And, you know, even a fundamental one of, you do have to manage up. You know, we all wish we had perfect bosses, perfect managers, but you do have to think about what you can be doing proactively to keep that relationship in the right place. And then to realize, another great lesson here is, there are different working styles. And so, you know, there's different communication styles, working styles, and to observe and or explicitly ask about what your manager is looking for or expects from you is another key. And, you know, maybe the biggest lesson that I heard from that is, you know, Connie, it does sound like that boss was not great. I mean, you sounded like the model employee, the way you were proactively doing everything. And yet, you pointed out, like, if you just said, oh, the boss is a jerk, that's a victim mentality, and you don't get better, and the situation mm-hmm. doesn't get better. And so even when I'm pretty sure that I'm 99% not the one at fault, I'll still take that 1% and say, okay, you know, what could I be doing better? What could I have done differently? I mean, it was years ago when I was in a car accident where, you know, some young kid sped in his sports car right through a red light, ran into me, and, you know, it was definitely his fault. And yet what I did and continue to think about is, like, what could I have done differently as I went through that intersection? And it does make me a better driver. And so even, you know, when bad things happen to you, even if it really isn't your fault, you don't gain anything by that mindset. Pretend it is a little bit your fault and you'll grow, you know, from that experience. And Connie, so you mentioned, you know, you immigrated with your parents from Hong Kong when you were, you know, almost 1 year old to Manhattan, to New York.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what are some of the memories? And this is, you know, in your book, I think it was really amazing. But, you know, what did your parents do for a living? What were some of your memories growing up in New York City?
My memories of growing up in New York City, and I spent all of my formative education years there, was always one of diversity and having to adapt. If there was one common thread that I can pull from my elementary school years to my middle school, junior high school years to high school, as well as college, is I was always required to adapt. And I'll give you an example. When we first moved to the Lower East Side of Manhattan, back then it wasn't so cool and hip as it is today. And it's funny you asked this question, because just last week I was in New York for meetings, and I was early meeting my mother for lunch, and I took a walk over to the apartment that we lived in and took pictures and said, wow, there's the synagogue that was next door is still there, even though when we lived there, it was a completely Hispanic and African-American neighborhood. We were the only Chinese family, so everyone knew us. We were the little Chinese family, La Chinita Connie. And I remember very specifically how everything was different from two blocks over Chinatown. Folks warming their hands by the garbage drums downstairs, having a lot of rats in our apartment. The smells, people cooking was very different. Language, of course, was very different. And that actually then translated over into even going forward into Brooklyn. When we moved into Brooklyn, we found ourselves still as the only little Chinese family, because then we moved into an all-American, Irish Catholic, traditional neighborhood. And we had third, fourth generation police officers and firefighters. Yeah. But once again, I was one of two Chinese kids in the entire elementary school.
Wow.
And once again, had to adapt, because, you know, what is this about people having Sunday dinner at 5 p.m. and then they supper, they eat again? So different. That makes no sense to me. Why would you eat at 5 o'clock? My parents aren't even home from work at 5 o'clock.
Right.
And then you eat again. What's supper? Isn't that the same as dinner? It was really culturally different from a Catholic religion standpoint, right. Predominantly Catholics in my neighborhood, to, but even, again, the traditions as well as the customs, day-to-day customs and lifestyle was very different. And then you fast forward into Stuyvesant High School and Brooklyn College for me, very, very diverse. So I would say what I remember is that there was always something different that I had to learn and I had to adapt to. Mm. And that included learning how to develop relationships as well as language. And to my great fortune, growing up on the Lower East Side was where I began my Spanish speaking skills. At 2 years old, a babysitter upstairs in the apartment upstairs, because everyone worked in my family, became my caretaker, and she was from the Dominican Republic. She didn't speak anything but Spanish. So I remember pointing to things and she saying it in Spanish, and that's how I learned. And then I learned, you know, of course, at home Chinese, and those carried through into my adult years. But that was something that I would say transcends even quite serendipitously into my professional development as I went into international development for many, many years of my professional career. Adapting became something I had already had a lot of practice at, and it helped dramatically when you go and you open up a new country, when you're bringing a brand to a consumer base who's never heard of you, when you're working with staff in a language that's not your day-to-day language, and you have a workplace environment that's also very different. But my parents were a very classic lower middle class family. My father was an accountant, spoke some English, and of course went to work for a bank. He actually worked at World Trade Center in one of the Bill Towers. And my mom was a seamstress, because even today she's still not completely fluent in English, and she sewed in a factory. And today she actually still, at 70 plus years old, finds her social network is going back to the factory in Chinatown to go sew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you tell in the book, you grow up, you get married, and then you move to Texas of all places, which really seemed out of, you know, ordinary. Like, what? You know, so what were you doing at the time? What was your husband doing at the time? And why did you end up going to Texas?
My husband was a waiter in a Chinese restaurant. He also was not fluent in English. He came and immigrated to the United States in his mid-20s. So very different from me. I grew up, I was very fluent, of course. I always thought of myself as an American. In fact, I told my mother, I'm never marrying a Chinese man. So not only did I marry a Chinese man, I married one who wasn't fluent in English. Never tell your mother never.
That's right.
And he was a waiter. I was working for Lancome at the time. At the time, there was a lot of activity happening at large corporate retail levels. Federated Department Stores was a very large corporation that at the time had owned Macy's and Bloomingdale's, still do. And I worked for Lancome and a retail chain called A&S, Abraham and Strauss. And they had at the time just announced that they were going to purchase and acquire the entire chain of Abraham and Strauss stores. These are all legacy 100-plus-year-old department store chains. Now, that's important because there was change happening, even though I was not aware of anything yet, but I heard rumblings. You know, you hear rumblings going on in the buying office, and you hear rumblings amongst your boss and the higher-ups. So timing was at in the mid-90s, and we went to Texas to visit my husband's cousin, who was a born and raised all-American, non-Chinese speaking young man who was a software engineer. And he went to Texas. He went to Dallas, Texas, Plano to be exact. And that was where it was an immensely growing community of software engineers, telecom industry. You had MCI, you had Xerox, you had Texas Instruments, you had a lot of technology companies were sprouting up, a lot of job creation, and a booming housing market. So the community, it literally was green fields. It's like going out to Pioneers to the West. One minute it was green grass, next thing you know it was a subdivision.
Right.
And big box stores, etc. So we went to visit him on vacation. For years he had been saying, leave New York, come to Texas. Houses are cheaper. There are less people, less traffic. You never have to look for parking. We went to visit him because I had no notions of ever leaving New York. My mother's side of the family was all there. I had lots of cousins, lots of aunts and uncles. And my husband, I think, had a different mindset. He had lived in Belgium, where his brother had immigrated to. He, of course, was fairly still new to the U.S. And when we visited, we were very enticed, excited, and attracted by the newness of it all.
Right, right.
The, wow, houses are seriously less expensive. Wow, look at this super Walmart, super Target. We'd never seen anything so big. Space is such a commodity in a city like New York that we were, I think, excited at the prospect of maybe one day owning my own home, that all-American dream of having my own home and being able to afford it.
Where were you living in New York? So you obviously, you didn't own your own home.
No, we were renting a studio apartment where the landlord put up a wall and two doors and rented it to us as a two-bedroom in Brooklyn.
Okay, you go from that environment to Texas, outside of Dallas. And, you know, it was interesting in your book, you said, I would have assumed you would go out there and take the first job available because you need money, right? But that's not what you
did.
That's
what my mother said. Take the first thing that comes along, even if it's a supermarket job, because, you know, being, again, immigrants, you take the first thing that comes along. And I didn't. I didn't. I will tell you, my husband in all his wisdom said, we've made this really big move. It's a big commitment. Don't take the first thing that comes to the door. Think about what you think you might want to do that's going to be meaningful. There's never a guarantee, but don't take the first thing that comes to the door.
LeadX family, don't forget, you can get links and notes from this interview over at leadx.org. And you can also download our free ebook, Richard Branson's 7 Secrets to Leadership, at leadx.org/Branson. And if you want to get more LeadX in your everyday life, just follow us at LeadX Life on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. That's one word, LeadX Life. And if you've ever gotten even just one good idea from a LeadX show, do me a huge favor. It takes less than a minute. And just subscribe to the show on iTunes and leave a quick rating. Just go to leadx.org/subscribe. Until next time, friends, remember, leadership is about influence, which means we are all leaders. Whether you're a salesperson or a soldier, an entrepreneur or an executive, a coach or a counselor, you are leading all of the time. You positively influence with your behavior, and you influence negatively when you're a bystander. How will you lead today?